You're listening to We're Only Human, hosted by Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We're Only Human focuses and highlights how modern technology and new ways of working are creating a more people-centric workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.h3hr.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to We're Only Human. We had a lot of great feedback on our initial show. Really excited just about the positive support and everything else. And again, really glad to be part of the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. Today, I'm going to bring you a kind of different conversation. The last time it was just me. Today, actually, I'm going to be talking with a local talent acquisition leader, a good friend. And I'm going to ask her about some of her kind of unique philosophies and thoughts around recruiting, because I think it's a challenge for a lot of us to think about recruiting differently. A lot of companies are doing the same thing today that they were doing 5 or 10 years ago, and they're wondering why they're having challenges with that. So again, I'm going to bring her in. She's had some unique experience, kind of broad range, and I think she has some really interesting things to say. So Christina, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, Christina Minyard, again, she's the senior talent manager at Ignite here in Huntsville. And tell me a little about your role.
So my role here at Ignite is pretty interesting. I am responsible for all of our talent acquisition and any of our talent management needs. And then I'm also responsible for our education services here at Ignite.
Awesome. So we were actually talking a little bit before the show started about those education services, because I think that's an interesting piece. Again, maybe it's just my own nerdiness that's interested in it, but I'm kind of curious. Just tell me a little bit about that, because I think that there are some parallels with what we do every day in HR too.
So what we do as far as our education services, at our core as a company, we provide IT services to a lot of government customers here in the Huntsville area, and so we were able to translate that into the education side by providing that same service to school systems, specifically school systems that take on a digital one-to-one initiative where they want to have a device in every student's hand. When they do that process, sometimes they overlook the fact that they need to grow their IT department with that. And so that's basically where we come in, and we handle all of that for them.
Yeah, and see, we were talking actually earlier today about a session we're actually going to be doing a training on in the coming months for the local chapter here for people that's more of a strategic focus. And we're going to talk about how to tie recruiting and selection and hiring into the business objectives and how those things can be linked together. And I think that's a good example of how we make decisions sometimes in a bubble without thinking about the broader impacts and how it might impact things, right?
Right. And hey, do we need to earmark some of that budget for people to support that initiative, or maybe for tools on the opposite side to support the people?
Let's just blow it all on the technology.
That's my plan. The technology will run itself.
Yes. So that's a little about Ignite. Tell me about, let's go back a little bit. Again, go back to some of your past and what you've done, because again, I think it's kind of a unique blend of experience that gives you some of the flavor of the ideas and things that you have today.
So I was lucky enough to get my start in recruiting in a temp shop. So I know that's not like an attractive phrase, and and even temp shops hate to be called that. They prefer things like staffing agency or what have you. But I worked for a smaller family-owned company that was just in the Southeast, and we had capabilities to provide staffing for a variety of clients from, you know, manufacturing to medical. And so we were really covering a wide variety of positions, which meant obviously that I had a wide variety of clients. And I had the flexibility and freedom to run the location that I was at in a way that made sense for my customer set. So I learned a lot of really hard lessons the hard way, but it was great, and it's where most of my, you know, recruiting philosophies, as you called them, kind of stemmed from. And being able to partner with a variety of HR departments through that role really taught me what I know today. And then from there, I went into a corporate recruiting role for a very, 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 very technical company. And covered a lot of college recruiting, which is fun, very interesting. It's nice to get in front of the students every now and then and kind of play off their like excitement and eagerness to, you know, make their way in the world. And then, you know, experience technical positions as well. And then now I'm here at Ignite.
So I can remember when you first started at that, the technology company, the technical firm, and what your kind of how the transition was for you. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you immediately noticed that were different between staffing and then the quote-unquote corporate recruiting world.
So the very first thing that I noticed is that it was way, way slower than being in that staffing role because, you know, when you have 60 to 90 different clients on different sites across North Alabama, you know, you're constantly getting phone calls, you're constantly getting emails, you're constantly having new job recs, and you just never stop moving. And you know that you never stop moving because that's how your pay is measured because you never stop moving. Well, when I made the switch over to corporate, there was either something to do or there wasn't. And there was really no commission incentive to go and create more work. And it's different because you're on the inside. So what's the cost of creating more work if that's not necessary, if that makes sense? And then the second thing I think was probably my own fault. I had convinced myself that transitioning into the corporate world meant I didn't have to sell recruiting anymore. I thought that that meant, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to have this job, I'm going to have my little office, and people are going to know where to find me, and people are going to know, hey, we might need another engineer in 3 to 6 weeks. We better call Christina today and let her know that this is what we're thinking. That was not the case whatsoever. Hiring managers still operated in their bubble. They still waited till the last minute to put in their requisitions or sometimes not put a requisition in at all. I very much still had to go around and sell my abilities. Like, hey, I can do this for you. Like, don't make this hard. Don't make this complicated. I can do this. This is what I specialize in. So there was still that sales aspect to recruiting that I thought I was getting away from.
Okay, awesome. So one of the things that's been on my mind lately, especially around the talent acquisition, I've been talking to a lot of companies, technology vendors, and corporate leaders kind of like yourself. And we recently did a study at Lighthouse around the modern measures of success in talent acquisition, really focusing on how we're measuring success. Because for a long time, it was, you know, if you ask someone, all they have to say is it's time to fill or cost per hire. Or, you know, when we did our follow-up interviews after the study, quality of hire, everybody said, you know, quality of hire is the most important thing to us. Can you help us figure out what that means and what that looks like? Because people know it's important, but they're not sure what it really means, how to use the data, you know, what data to pull in and how to make decisions, things like that. So I want to ask you a couple of questions kind of around the that sort of aspect around the measurements and everything else and talk about some of the things, because I know, again, you've been accountable for a lot of these things in the day to day. And I know that you have some things to push back on a little bit. And again, because of what you believe, so it'll be kind of fun. So just to start out, what kind of things, you know, as a recruiter, do the leaders of the company expect out of you in terms of results? What are they looking for?
Well, they want their jobs filled. Because they know, you know, managers, division managers, whatever level of management you have in your organization, if they're not getting their jobs filled, they're not complaining to you probably. They're probably going to go and complain to the leaders of the company. So if the leaders hear about that, you know, they're not happy about that. So probably first and foremost, jobs being filled. Secondly, customer service. You know, you can be an awesome recruiter and be filling jobs left and right, but if you're making everyone miserable, that's probably flowing up the chain too.
How do you kind of tap into that and stay on top of whether you're meeting those needs or if you're, you know, you're there? I mean, obviously, if no one's coming to you to fill their jobs, that's kind of a sign. That's a, you know, if you're in a bigger shop, that's obvious.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of variables that play into that, right? So it's going to be kind of a case-by-case basis. And I know people don't want to hear that because they want to know what the magic pill is, but there's not one. You just have to know what your organization is trying to do, and you have to be able to go and have those conversations with the people that are influencing that.
Or even that specific manager and what they're looking for. You know, someone that moved from a technical role, not that this ever happens, but we promote someone from a technical role into a management role because they're very technical and good at it. You know, salespeople becoming sales managers and that they don't know anything about managing people or engineering managers.
But they
managers
had the best sales, right?
Yeah,
so they're good.
But when those kind of things happen and those people are very technical in their background, they might not be as well-versed in the recruiting aspect or anything like that, but they want to talk to you in a technical way and want you to understand them and be able to converse with them.
You know, and I will say that it was difficult to have those conversations when I first started there because hiring managers were looking to have technical focused conversations. So when I came in not knowing anything about radars, it was really hard to have a conversation with them about their radar job.
Yes.
So I had to commit to learning their lingo and learning, you know, what is important to them and how can we have a conversation around that and still include what's important to the recruiting process.
Awesome. So tell me about quality of hire.
Well, quality of hire is a great metric, right? Your organization needs to pay attention to quality of hire, but you can't hold me as the recruiter accountable for quality of hire.
Why not?
Because I don't have any hiring, you know, decisions. Like I don't influence that. I'm not the final say. The hiring manager is. And so I don't own that decision, so I can't be held to that metric.
Okay. So you're more on the, I know you hate the term sorcerer, but you're more on the quality of candidate, maybe the quality of the people that you're putting up to the managers.
I can absolutely be measured on quality of candidate, okay. But I cannot be measured on quality of hire. Okay. That's just crazy talk.
Again, I think that's just if we're going to be very, very bold and crazy in our thinking, why not?
Should I have done this anonymously?
Oh, goodness. I'll just back up and cut that part out where you're so. One of the things that I think is different about your approach is because of your staffing background, you see every hiring manager as an actual customer, as someone to serve, as someone to deliver something to. Whereas a lot of the challenges that I've seen in the data the last couple of years is in talent acquisition, people see that relationship between the recruiters and the hiring managers is strained. Either the hiring managers are slow to respond. You give me a look. Either they're slow to respond or the recruiter is not delivering them that quality of candidate they're looking for because they're asking for a list of 487 required things, you know, whatever that is.
Essential function number one,
yes.
Essential function number two. And you know what? It's completely fair that, you know, maybe hiring managers can be slow to respond sometimes, and they'll still be slow to respond when you treat them like a customer. But I think sometimes that relationship turns out the way it does because we work in HR, right? Mm-hmm. Usually there are some organizations that split their recruiting and their HR up, but just generally speaking, we work in HR, and so we see everyone kind of as our employees or at best as our coworkers. Mm-hmm. And they are our employees when we're taking care of them, like, oh, we're taking care of this for our employees. But you have to have that customer service focus or they're going to feel like you're telling them what to do and you're not there to help them. Mm-hmm. And if you can't identify what's important to them and then serve that, then they're going to keep resisting, no matter how good of a recruiter you are. They're going to keep resisting, and they're going to make your life a little miserable.
Well, they'll see you as the vending machine. I'll put a wreck in and get a person out, and not as this
right.
is a partnership. Hey, I hear this coming up on the horizon. Can you be aware of this?
And I'm telling you, so many times people see, oh, well, I have to post this job with the recruiter because that's what we have to do to be compliant because we have to meet our whatever in the affirmative action plan or that's what they want me to do. That doesn't mean my recruiter's any good at what they do. So if you don't have that relationship and you build that relationship when you know that that's a customer, right? When you see that that's where your work comes from and that's who's responsible for your paycheck. I mean, obviously, you know, at that role, I had a manager and then a department manager. But really, if you break it down, I didn't really work for them. I worked for the hiring managers. Mm-hmm. They were accountable for what I produced.
Yes.
But I worked for the hiring managers.
Yeah. Okay. They were the ones almost basically directing what your
exactly.
time was spent on.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago that sometimes organizations break out HR, break out recruiting in separate functions.
Mm-hmm.
Who in the organization owns recruiting?
Well, see, and I think that that's why that happens at some organizations, right? Because people are trying to answer that question, who owns recruiting? And some HR managers want to be like, hey, that's totally my wheelhouse. And some want to be like, I hate recruiting. Yeah. Definitely make them their own department. But the reality is neither one of us own recruiting, right? Like, we're there to perform recruiting, but we don't own it. Because, again, we don't have any of those hiring decision capabilities. We don't have that responsibility. So we don't really own it. It's totally a joint venture. It's going to be between obviously your recruiting team or HR, wherever you want to put that in the org chart, and your hiring managers and the C-suite.
Okay. What about the employee base? I mean, in the case of referrals, we want everybody out there kind of hunting and scouting for that next person. Would you say that employees are kind of involved in that, or is it more higher level?
You know, I think that employees can be involved in that. It really is going to be a reflection of what your culture is for your organization. I think, like, so for that particular facility, and Ignite is ESOP as well, but that particular facility was ESOP, which is completely employee-owned. And so I think that can be a driver, you know, where some companies will put together a nice, fancy, like, employee referral bonus. When you're 100% ESOP, maybe that's not necessary because people are vested in the final outcome of the company already. So they are working to refer good employees to contribute to that employee stock ownership plan, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're not going to sabotage the chances of the company succeeding
just to get your buddy in there. $800 check work with your friend. Yeah.
So that actually reminds me, a couple of years ago, I heard someone, their company won Best Places to Work for several years in a row in their local area. And the guy said, you don't build a great place to work, you defend it. You know, and getting those employees involved and protecting it from those outside influences, whether they are innocuous, you know, seemingly.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that.
So talk a little about the candidate experience. You can't turn around, you can't read something without that being, you know, top of mind. What do you see as key elements of that for you? Again, part of that you see also jointly owned by the hiring manager and the recruiter. I'm kind of curious what your thoughts on it.
Okay, so candidate experience is my favorite because I think that that's what we have to work to. All of us on the inside of the organization already know what it's like to work for the organization, right? And what we're trying to do is let everyone outside of the organization know that. And that means whether we're interested in hiring this person or not, they need to see what it's like on the inside so they can go back and tell their friends. So one of the elements of my job previously was to do the college recruiting function. And as many schools as we went to with just a team of two recruiters, we had to sometimes bring technical employees with us or send them to schools to perform some recruiting for us because college recruiting, everything happens together right there like in a 6-week span and you can only go to so many campuses yourself in 1 week. So in training those engineers to go to campus and do this recruiting for us in a similar way to me and the other recruiter, that was one of the big things I would focus on with them. You know what, you may start talking to this candidate and you may not like them and you may not want them to come to work here, but don't talk down to them. Don't dismiss them. You know, keep it brief, but make sure that you still kind of give them a glimpse of what it's like here, what kind of people we hire.
How we treat people.
You don't want maybe, so we had, you know, stringent requirements for our GPA. So if this person doesn't meet those requirements, but maybe their roommate is somebody who does meet their requirements, you don't want that person to go back and say, oh my gosh, I talked to this company at the career fair today and they were just so mean and rude and condescending, and then turn that roommate off that does fit our requirements.
Yes.
Like that's not good. So, you know, I think that's why the candidate experience is so important, because we want people in the community to speak well of us, whether we hired them or not.
Awesome. That's a good answer. Yeah, I've seen, I mean, I know that you're a big fan of checking Glassdoor and trying to stay on top of those.
I love Glassdoor.
Staying on top of the kind of things that people are saying about the company, and that has given more transparency than ever. But still, like in that example, you know, those college students might not ever even go and check out the Glassdoor profile because they are on a tight enough network with other people, alumni groups or whatever else, where they're tight enough to know, oh, you know, don't go there, don't go there. And you and I know there are places even here locally that we would never apply for a job because we know the stories.
Right.
Like, and you, every single touch point with someone, whether it's as simple as a quick phone call or a meeting, you know, in the elevator, riding to the career fair, is an opportunity to prove.
And what's that, I don't know, maybe it's a made-up statistic where people say, like, if you have a bad experience, you're, like, more likely to tell, I don't know, 6 people than if you have a good experience and you're not going to tell anyone, or something like that. And I think that it's true of recruiting experiences, too.
Yeah, I think that 87% of statistics are made up on the spot, so.
Really? Where'd you get that data from?
Yeah, good question. So this has been awesome. Again, it's a lot of fun just to kind of talk through these different thoughts, because a lot of people that are listening are HR leaders in the trenches doing the stuff, and whether they love recruiting like we do, or it's just one of those things they have to do, you know, bite the bullet, hold your nose, and just do it because it's something they have to do. But I wanted to give them some ideas around thinking about it differently, not just from the philosophical perspective, but how to treat people differently in the process, how to treat hiring managers as if they're a customer of yours versus just someone you have to deal with in this thing because we have to hire somebody. So I think that's really incredible insights, and thank you a lot for that. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more, how can they do that?
So I have a blog where I kind of put some of those thoughts out there every now and then. It's hrpockets.com. And then I spend a lot of time on Snapchat and Twitter. Not right now because, you know, I'm out of data. But next month, you can catch up with me on Snapchat and Twitter. Twitter is hrecruit, and then Snapchat is kmini32.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening on this episode of We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, and we'll be back soon.
Thanks for listening to We're Only Human with Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. To learn more and to listen to the show archives for We're Only Human and all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows, go to www.h3hr.com. And remember to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Network podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast player app.